Welcome, welcome. We are here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Deacon John may have the flu. He's experiencing symptoms of such and contacted me a little while ago and said, can I take the show? So here I am, Angela Black, taking over today for Deacon John with his show Liberation Nation here on the number one 100% listener-supported commercial-free radio station on the net. And I am lucky enough, oh my goodness, last-minute stuff happens, divine timing happens, and guess who's here with me today, everyone? The one, the only, Vinny Eastwood. Welcome, Vinny.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'm the only one because there's probably, like, I don't know, 16,000 parallel dimensions going simultaneously with other Vinny Eastwoods that are like just real douchebags or something. But yeah.
So 15,999 douchebags.
It sounds like a really good movie, you know, like it'd be the sequel to Seven Psychopaths, 16,799 douchebags.
A beer on the wall, 16,700, beer on the wall. I don't know. You take one down, you pass it around. Do you know that song in New Zealand?
Of course we do. It's a beer drinking song, and our entire country is drunk most of the time. In fact, there was a recent poll that said that about half the women voters who voted for the current Prime Minister, the former Federal Reserve Banker, John Key, voted for him because they thought he was very handsome. And I think this highlights the drinking problem that we have in this country. Ladies, no more beersies for you.
No more beersies on voting day anyway.
Yeah, righto.
All right, so that's crazy. You know, I do come from one of the biggest drinking states in the United States, Wisconsin. We make beer there. That's what we do. So I can relate and wonder often, whatever happens on voting day and the result the next day.
That's the great thing about drinking in a cold climate is that you don't need a beer fridge, you know. You just leave it outside in the snow with you around a fireplace or whatever while you're drinking it up. It'd be fantastic.
True. It is cold up here. And as a matter of fact, I made some soup yesterday, some beef barley soup, and I got to keep it outside all night because it was so dang cold. So indeed and agreed.
Coming up soon towards the end of this month, I think I'm going to actually be taking a month off. So I need to recharge the batteries because I've learned over the years that basically you do need recharge time. It's not something that people can do all day every day in a perpetual kind of way. It's actually a really really tough job being a radio show host and an activist. And sometimes we just need some of that wind down time kind of thing, like at the end of the year to sort of enjoy life for a bit. And kind of remember what you're fighting for.
True that. I completely agree. I often have found myself taking time off when I do, especially when I do a daily show here on this station, which is, by the way, everyone, freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio. What I want to say is, when I was doing a daily show, it just got to be, my mind got fried. And it's really important to take time off because if your message gets swayed because you're jaded, something like that, it truly affects the ripple effect that we leave, that footprint we leave, that stamp we leave as truthers on the radio, as communicators. It's not that our message is necessarily altered. It's just that there may be a vibe behind it that says, I'm exhausted, I'm just pumping this out today, and then maybe it has a different effect as it reaches through. At the same time, it could be an opposite thing, and I just could be completely full of crap.
Well, really there's a tonal thing going on, and the world's made of frequencies and matter built upon matter and life built upon life, and if there's not a whole lot of life inside you and you're kind of like angry or depressed or something, those vibes actually do come across in your voice, and whether or not people realize it, they pick it up. So it's kind of your responsibility as a radio show host, I believe, to keep yourself I think this is actually what good producers are about, is they keep the talent happy. And when I started up on American Freedom Radio back in 2010, my producer was a man named Mitch Santel, who was like, oh my god, God, the most amazing producer you could ever hope for. Yeah, he really, really supported me and taught me everything he knew about the radio business. And he actually helped me to become more knowledgeable about who I am, particularly who I am on the radio, by giving me so much advice from his years of work in the music industry and in talk radio. And, you know, I think sometimes in your life, those people will come along who actually are just sort of like meant to be there right at the time. And it's been really good because I think he's gone back to the States now. You know, he's living like 4 kilometers away from a nuclear reactor, just soaking up the rays in Malibu or something. And the element that I thought was quite important about this is to, you know, always remember the people who helped you get where you are today. Like, you know how there's this saying, oh, remember the little people, you know? And I think that's actually really, really important, because otherwise you get too full of yourself. And if you get too full of yourself, you get too far ahead of yourself.
Yes, very true. And I'm glad you're saying that, because there is a staff of producers here on Revolution Radio that are often, I don't know about unsung, but definitely unheard for the most part. And they are dedicated to helping hosts do their shows. I personally am self-produced, but I've been doing that since the beginning at Revolution Radio. So, you know, but I think it is important, exactly, especially if you're a persona such as yourself. I don't know. Do you have a producer now, or are you self-produced, Vinny?
I'm essentially self-produced, but I do have Sean Bell, who connects to the studio for me and connects up my guests for me. So he's a right. he's a bells and whistles knobs and sliders kind of guy,
and a gem.
I've actually been quite impressed with how Johnny on the spot that he is, because back in my previous role, the board ops were sometimes. Because they had to produce like 6 shows in a row or something like that, they'd like go out to take a leak or grab a glass of water or something like that, and just when they left the room, the guest would drop off, and I'd tell them to reconnect them, and they wouldn't be there, kind of thing. It happened occasionally, but mm-hmm. Yeah, there's none of that here on Revolution Radio with the fabulous producer Sean Bell. And you know, this does, it reminds me of a conversation I had with a truther on Facebook this one time. He said, I'm a hardcore truther. And I go, really? Because I've never known a hardcore truther to refer to themselves as actually a hardcore truther. And he's, I was like, so have you done a radio show? Have you done YouTube videos? Have you got a Facebook thing that you're sharing out information, a website, a blog, anything at all? And he's like, no, I just watch stuff and occasionally like it and share it and what have you. I said, oh, so you're a keyboard truther, are you? And he took that as an insult, but I actually meant it as a compliment, you know, because I think about war, you know, like we're in a war for freedom, yeah, globally speaking. And if anybody remembers that in any kind of battle or any sort of prolonged engagement, especially what we're into now, there's all sorts of roles within the armed forces, you know. I mean, let's think about this. Let's say the soldiers on the front line had no medics, had no people setting up base camp and putting up the tents and ferrying people back and forth, nobody to put up the showers, nobody to cook the meals, nobody to do any of those things. They wouldn't survive more than a couple of days on the front line. And Correct. So it's the people that actually do a lot of the background work, in my opinion, that are actually doing a lot of the important stuff. And it's often those who do the most important jobs who receive the least amount of recognition for it, and I think we need to change that.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, everyone has a role, and when that role is fulfilled properly, it makes the whole machine run well. Whatever area that's in, whatever you know, maybe there's you know, whether it's a community situation, and I'm not necessarily talking about politics. I'm talking about you know. The neighborhood, you know, this guy has all of the, you know, my neighbor, for instance, has a bunch of awesome survival things that he picks up as he travels on through thrift stores and estate sales, et cetera. And And then, you know, whatever I can offer him. And then we all seem to come together. When I was out of town during trash day, and my neighbor who was watching my cats literally thought, and he actually had a brain and thought, I should take out their trash because it's trash day. And I was just so impressed. I mean, it's something very small, but at the same time, it really continues to make the machine well oiled in whatever venue we are speaking about, including war, obviously, which we are in right now, the war on truth. So the keyboard truther, as you're saying, I also looked at it as not an insult, but as a compliment, and I think it's great. And all you did was ask him because you were interested in defining what he meant by hardcore truther, and that's something else that's very important is operationalization of terms. You know, in certain cultures, other people will take what could be a compliment as an insult. And it's very interesting to watch all of that happen. So I'm glad did this hardcore truther person understand that you weren't insulting him after the next part of the conversation?
He called me an egotistical so-and-so and blocked me on Facebook.
Which, unfortunately, is a war-type mentality.
Hey, you can't please anybody, but you try. You do what you can.
Wow. All right. So we did this last minute, and I'm very thrilled that we did that. And we are just doing some, intro stuff here, getting a little chat out of the way. I have an article here on fracking. One of the issues that is true to my heart, the anti-fracking movement and the fact that, you know, they're making Swiss cheese out of the planet. So I do have an article here, which I thought I'd read a little bit of and ask your take on it. And then I'm wondering if after that, since we didn't really have time to plan this show, maybe you have something that you would like to get into regarding current events in your world. Does that work for you?
But not really, because I don't watch the news. I mean, I'm mostly like some kind of a douchebag New Zealand philosopher at the moment. You know, I think I need to get myself a cane and a pipe of some description. You know, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, really?
You know, and some spectacles, maybe even a monocle. Yeah.
Wow. Vinny Eastwood and his monocle.com.
Yeah. I can give you a monogram with my monocle.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be like a stamp with the monocle attached to it. And it's interesting you say that. I often do not watch mainstream media news as well, but this usually is a current event show. So I did peruse a few websites that I utilized a lot in the past on my shows, like Blacklisted News, Natural News, IntelliHub. And then I also sometimes will peruse some of the mainstream media situations more as a sociological view and study than actually believing what I'm reading. I tend to look at mainstream media news as, a way to study what the main gen pop is being fed every day and what people are believing.
It reminds me of the movie Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, and he sits down on his computer and he goes, okay, let's see what lies they're telling us today. And I just thought to myself, you know, I've got quite an eclectic background and knowledge on a number of topics. And what was funny is that I can watch or listen to mainstream news now just like as a one-off. And it's almost like, you know how some people, like, they read between the lines? Mm-hmm. I can kind of fill in what's missing in between the lines now. So I'll read out an article on air, and then they'll say something, and then I'll go, well, actually, that's also da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and actually explain all of the lies that are inside an article without even reading it first off the bat or even researching it, because I've done so many interviews over so many years with so many people on so many topics that the chances are I know more about the article than the person who wrote it.
Interesting. And I love your confidence about it, because you truly can back that up. And it's funny you mentioned that. Throughout my life, whether it's a current topic or not, a current event, that type of thing, I often have that same talent where I'll be told, you know, the initial, some person's take on the initial, event that is up for question. And I'll often see all of the stuff surrounding that particular, you know, viewpoint as well. I often do, you know, find myself and much like you, and forgive me for, you know, trying to own up to the Vinny stature, but no, much like you, when I when I see an event, I often can't, I have to make jokes. I have to be comical and go, well, you know, this thing's also going on behind the scenes. I mean, come on, you know. And I see things like that the same way. So I'm not saying I'm as experienced as you, which I'm not, but I am. I you know.
Well, I have a good example.
Please,
like,
I walked into
my house and my wife tells me, "Hey, Vinny, did you hear that there was a truck bomb that got defused in Times Square?" And I say, "Ah, don't worry about it, baby. It was probably just the FBI." And it turns out it was. You know, I mean, look. It's interesting how accurate you can be when you're like really, really cynical and jaded. And I think that's why most journalists become cynical and jaded, is because they want to remain accurate.
Yeah. Wow. It's a big statement. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, I found myself becoming like this, just like, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so cynical. It's so jaded. I'm just like a real journalist now. That's awesome.
I'm just like a real journalist. So in other words, you know, you were the Pinocchio, not really, because Pinocchio was a little liar. But I mean, you were the wooden boy and now you become a real boy is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. I was a wooden journalist and now I'm a real journalist. Yeah. No qualifications necessary.
I'm reaching there. I know.
That was actually quite funny because I was just thinking about a journalism class that I took back in sixth form when I was 16. Jan Irvine, who teaches the trivium, you know, the who, what, when, where, why, and how. And that's basically the questions you need to ask to do your proper grammar in order to be able to report something as fact, is be able to answer all of those questions in sequence. Otherwise, you obviously don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the inverted pyramid.
That was the only thing that they taught us in journalism class. Really, is asking those simple trivium questions. And it was interesting because I saw a Facebook picture, you know, like a meme about what journalism is supposed to do. And it's like, tell the truth, tell both sides, help people who don't have the ability to get their stories out, to tell their stories, and all of these other things. And I was just thinking, my God, not only does the mainstream media not embody a single one of the principles of journalism, but me, without even knowing what those principles are, embodied them by instinct because I wasn't a dishonest scumbag out to make some money so I can get myself a trip to Tahiti and a Gucci handbag. All right, that's all these people care about.
Wow. You know, that's very interesting. Gucci, Fendi.
Onto the fracking article.
Okay.
Read the fracking article.
Well, and interestingly, when I first came across the word fracking, it was when I was watching the second version of Battlestar Galactica, and they utilized it as the F word. And I always looked at that. I had seen that back when I think before I knew what fracking was, I'm pretty sure. And I found that to be a brilliant use of the term, first of all, because they got to swear like sailors through the whole thing while using the word fracking. And then when I did learn what fracking is, I thought, my God, that was an absolutely perfect analogy, or I should say synonym, that type of thing. And what else is interesting about that is that Edward James Olmos was the star in that series, and I don't watch a lot of series, but when I watch them, I'll binge watch them all the way through. Edward James Olmos is a water activist, and so it's very interesting that the word fracking was used, and I do find it to be somewhat similar to the F word. So anyway, this is coming from Zero.
It's not the F word, but it's Edward James Olmos the F word.
Exactly, very, very nicely done. Okay, so this is coming from Zero Hedge via Blacklisted News, and it involves the state that is right next to me, California, big state, going through a huge drought right now, as is Nevada, by the way, but they are not as largely populated, so I believe they're able to distribute their water much more easily than the millions of people that are in California. And I was actually driving by my lake yesterday. I live by Lake Tahoe. I live in Lake Tahoe, and I took some pictures yesterday. The lake is at its lowest level that it's been in 15 years, and we were literally, you know, there are docks where the boats come in and obviously, attach themselves to the to the dock or the pier, whatever you want to call it. And these things were actually dried up all the way back to where the entire pier was on sand. And another 50 feet out, there was nothing but sand. And I was in shock. I'd never seen it. I'd never actually blatantly seen it like that. And I took some pictures yesterday. So yes, there's a drought. And also there's fracking. So here we go. This particular article says, dear California readers, if you drank tap water this morning or at any point in the past few weeks or months, you may be in luck as you no longer need to buy oil to lubricate your engine. Just use your blood and think of the cost savings. That's the good news. Also the bad news, because of the California's Department of Conservation's Chief Deputy Director Jason Marshall told an NBC Bay Area news station, California state officials allowed oil and gas companies to pump up 3 billion gallons, call it 70 million barrels, of oil fracking contaminated wastewater into formerly clean aquifers. And now aquifers, which at least on paper are supposed to be off limits to any kind of activity like that, are protected by the government's Environmental Protection Agency, an agency which obviously there's another, you know, three-letter alphabet, you know, word. They're all over the place, FBI, EPA, BINGO. So an agency which it appears was richly compensated by the same oil and gas companies to look elsewhere. So you have the Environmental Protection Agency, which is, you know, supposed to be something that's protecting our environment, obviously, taking payoffs from oil and gas companies to go ahead and pump dirty water into the clean aquifers. We're talking 3 billion gallons of crap stuck into what little water exists in the aquifers right now. So you have all that. I think I said aquifers, you know, you say potato, I say potato. And the scariest words of admission one can ever hear from a government apparatchik is in multiple different places of the permitting process, an error could have been made. And then it just goes on to say this, and I'm going to kind of wrap this up in a few minutes. Because nothing short of a full-blown disaster prompts the use of dreaded passive voice. And what was unsaid is that the biggest error that was made, in other words, or is so to speak, that they quoted, is that someone caught California regulators screwing over the taxpayers just so a few major oil companies could save their shareholders a few billion dollars in overhead fees. And now that one government agency has been caught flaunting the rules, the other government agencies and certainly private citizens and businesses start screaming. After all, some faith in the well-greased, pardon the pun, government apparatus has to remain. And it continues on just a few more. I think I'll go with a couple more sentences here. It's inexcusable, says Holland Kretzmann at the Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco, at a time when California is experiencing one of the worst droughts in history. We're allowing oil companies to contaminate what would otherwise be very useful groundwater resources for irrigation and for drinking. It's possible these aquifers are now contaminated irreparably. Okay, that's a huge statement. So the only clean water that we have, well, you know, at least some of the only clean water we have in the state of California, is contaminated because the EPA is being paid off by a few major oil companies to save their investors and or shareholders billions of dollars. So if that's not complete and total, you know.
What this reminds me of is what was the film, Steven Seagal, On Deadly Ground. He does this speech at the end and he says, if a company gets fined $25,000 a day for dumping toxic waste, but they're making $10 million a day in savings by not disposing of it properly, then it's only good business to continue to do so. And one thing that you have to really understand about the oil industry is that they're inexplicably tied with the government. I mean, you know anything about how the Rockefeller Standard Oil started up? It's because competition is a sin and it's a cartel. The whole thing is a cartel. Okay. So think of oil company. When somebody says oil company, think criminal resource extraction cartel. That's actually how it literally translates in the original Latin. And what people don't realize is that following rules isn't something these people actually have to do, because right, they can make the rules up. And it doesn't matter how much people jump up and down and complain and go, oh, you've done this, you've done that. It's already too freaking late. The ship has sailed. The horse has bolted. Whatever analogy you want to use, your water's contaminated till the end of time. in the height of your drought. And what strikes me, and I was talking with Suzanne Posel about this. You remember the Bundy Ranch debacle that was going on? Well, apparently the under the Agenda
That's
21 protocols.
Yeah, that's in my backyard.
And they were actually trying to get fracking consents along his ranch and everything. And this was kind of played down in the media or hardly even mentioned at all. And when you look at, say, what's happening in the United Kingdom, Ian R. Crane, Fracking Nightmare, very, very good search to run there. What his conclusion is, and I tend to agree with him, is that fracking is part of the Agenda 21 protocols to get people off the land. Okay, so you have a look through ancient societies, none of them survive very long when their water source dries up. Okay, so if they want to depopulate California or Wisconsin or England or New Zealand, and they want to get people to be forced into the megacities that they're building now, poison the water, you know, because what are you going to do, bro? Because you need it to wash yourself, you need it to drink, you need it to do everything. Absolutely everything that we do in human society is predicated by our need for a constant supply of water. If you contaminate that in a particular area, that area very soon after will have no humans living in it.
Right, and not only that, it will also create war amongst the locals, if you will, because there will be a mad dash for whatever bottled water exists in the stores. And when those shelves are empty and the next shipment of water isn't coming for a few days, people will start to get angry with their neighbors because they're going to want that water. We're at a break right now. Everyone, I'm in for Deacon John today. My name is Angela Black. This is Liberation Nation, and I'm joined with I'm joined by Vinnie Eastwood today on this show here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. I'll speak it out. I'll get it out. All right, we'll be right back after the end of this break. Thanks. Welcome back, everyone, to Liberation Nation with Deacon John. Deacon is possibly sick with the flu, and it's very interesting. I've known a lot of people in the last few weeks that are getting sick with the flu. So take care of yourself, people. Do a lot of vitamin C. Liquid vitamin C is good. Ester C. And just basically eat healthy and wash your hands a lot. I don't know what else to say. Just, you know, stay out of public arenas when everyone's sick. And then again, for that matter, they're probably spraying it from the skies. So don't go outside. Just stay inside. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, I am Angela Black, if I didn't mention that. And you are listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one 100% listener-supported, commercial-free radio station on the internet. And we keep kicking because of donations from people like yourselves. So if you can find yourself on the donate button or the site support button on freedomslips.com, we would highly appreciate you figuring out how to. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, and I'm doing a lot of stumbling today with my verbiage. I'll slow down. If you can find yourself with a couple of dollars in your pocket, please do donate to the station however you find that plausible and possible. We would greatly appreciate it. It's great. You can get the new seed pack. There's a new shipment of seeds that just came in from Nighthawk himself, the owner of the station, who basically for a donation, which you can look into. I think there's a couple of different levels of donations that if you donate money to the station, you find yourself with great, wonderful prizes, including a bunch of non-GMO, non-altered, non-terminator seeds that you can grow wonderful, beautiful fruits and vegetables with. And I guess fruits are on trees, so I guess it would be considered vegetables for the most
part. They're non-terminator seeds. Come with me if you want to eat.
Exactly. So, and by the way, if you're wondering whose voice that was, everyone, let me reintroduce my esteemed guest for this first hour. Vinnie Eastwood is with me here on today's call. So thanks for joining me, Vinnie, at such late notice.
Oh, that's good. Hey, I was just checking my website rankings, and I'm in the top million websites in the world now. Yay!
Hey, out of how many? How many websites are there, Vinnie?
There's, I think, approximately 500 million.
500 million websites.
No, wait. No. I think it's more like 100 million.
Oh, okay. 100 million. Fair enough. That's 1,000, I think. 100 million? Wait. No, so, that's 1,000,000,000. There you go. It's 1,000. No, it's 100,000,000. Sorry. All right. You know, it's, I have to write stuff down if I'm going to do math. I mean, what the heck?
Oh, that public schooling system strikes again.
Oy vey. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
The empire strikes back.
You know, I really enjoy your sense of humor, and it's really a treat. You know, usually there's Deacon John on this show, and I think he – I don't know what he does on Tuesdays, but usually I believe the one, the only hijacker sometimes joins Deacon John during the show. And then the Crow usually hosts a half-hour segment on the market. crowsmarketwatch.com. Unfortunately, they both have issues going on. Deacon John is not feeling well, not sure what's going on with the hijacker. But then the Crow has unfortunately had some private matter to deal with, so he is not here as well today. So here you and I are, and I'm thrilled. You happen to wake up early. I'm like, do-do-do-do-do, Vinny, do-do-do-do-do. And now here we are. I know that's very intelligent, isn't it? The way I speak.
Well, things have been getting synchronistic a little bit lately. Like yesterday, a whole bunch of things happened to me. A friend of mine, he needs to move house, and he wants to kind of move into my area or something like that. And as we went out to lunch, and when we were there, a mutual friend of ours came down and sat down with us, and both of us were talking before he sat down about how hard the work is and basically how it just takes a lot out of you. And this guy sits down, and he's pretty elderly now. He's like around 90. His name's Alan. And he, instead of retiring and doing nothing, he starts writing these books of poetry. Oh. And he said something along the lines of, it's better to it's better to break down than to rust away. And I thought about that kind of really intensely, and I was like, you know what? He's actually really kind of right, because as soon as you stop working, you kind of lose your lust for life. You lose your motivation to a certain degree. And on our way home from there, my friend was looking for a new place to live, because his, you know, landlord's kicking him out after like 10 years of living there. And he wants to kind of live in my area. And just before we pull into my street, we see a for rent sign on a house that's just one street over. And we go in, we grab the number, and he might be, you know, moving just down the street from me, kind of thing. And it's sort of like, I got a call from my friend Jono as well. I was just thinking about him and thinking about going out and doing stuff or whatever, and he turns out that he's going to a music concert. And incidentally, I was thinking about you, Angela, just this morning, about the conversation we had the other night, and then here you are calling me up. And it's almost like I'm... like I've become more finely attuned with the ether sort of thing. Like I get these feelings, and then whatever I'm feeling just sort of like pops there right in front of me. It's kind of like paying attention to your own intuition. What that tells me is that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you're speaking my language completely. I often experience that, you know, that thing where I was just thinking about you and somebody calls you out of the blue, that type of thing. Yeah, I often find that there is a path and a journey that follows that initial reconnection with whomever. And it all, you know, when those types of things happen, I always see good coming out of it. And I do experience that on a regular basis. And I find myself somewhat responsible for that, with that power, if you will. And I don't know if it's a power like over people. I don't mean it that way. I mean, there is, and I guess power may not be the correct word. It is intuition. It is timing. It is synchronicity. It's all of those things. And when one is in tune and receptive to that, it is, and also honed enough to filter out negative vibes at the same time, because that's a skill in its own right. So when we walk through the day and find those things available to us, and by the way, okay, let me finish that thought. So when we find those things available to us, I do feel it is our responsibility to pay attention and not discount said moment, you know, that happens next after that thing. And also, I love, you've told me this a few times. You've told me this a few times now that you surround yourself, you know, one of the things you've said to me and to a few of us here that now that we've become friends here, since you're a part of the Revolution Radio family. And by the way, I do want you to promote your show in a minute, or I can do it for you, whatever. Actually you're probably better at that. So, okay. One of the things you said to me is that you surround yourself with people who are smarter than you and or are more knowledgeable, but also usually that entails the elderly and or people that are older than you and have maybe experienced more life than you. And I completely concur. And I get goosebumps when I think about it, because I know you're on the right path. If you're listening to the older people who come into your life, because I know they truly appreciate having a voice, and I know that we truly are honored to have them surround us. And unfortunately, at least in America, there is ageism going on, and you know, maybe not so much in other parts of the world. I don't know. I really haven't traveled the world. But I do think that, you know, people discount the elderly on a regular basis, and I find that to be one of the greatest moments of, I'm going to quote you, scumbaggery, you know, that I can find. If people discount the elderly and treat them as, you know, some type of lower than or plebeian person, I find that to be just ridiculous and unfortunate for the individual who's doing that, and I watch the repercussions of that and the general population. So if there is a youth, and I don't, you know, you're a wise old soul, so I don't really want to call you youth, but you are not even 30, and I hope that's okay to say, because I just said it. But basically, the generation that you come from, I really hope will embrace the wisdom of the elderly people and learn so much, because what else do you have? What, the internet? You know what I mean? So I think I'm done with my thought process, and well, I want you to comment if you could.
Well, I actually find it difficult to relate to people of my own age to a large degree, because it's kind of like my elders have instilled with me a lot of knowledge, and with knowledge comes power, and with power comes responsibility. So a lot of the time I'm not actually trying to relate to them. A lot of the time I'm actually enthralling them and imparting knowledge to them, that kind of thing. Like, I'll go out to what had happened one time? Oh, a truther rap artist here in New Zealand hosted a big kind of gig. Well, it wasn't really big, but there were about like five or six rap artists that got together to do a gig, and they invited me, and I was sitting with a lot of them afterwards. I like rolled three joints and then gave it to three groups of the rap artists and stuff like that, and of course they were very appreciative. And I sat there and like I was telling them all sorts of things, and they were like, "Wow," you know, like kind of mesmerized by some of the stuff that I know. And it's interesting, because that's exactly how I felt coming into this movement, when I was speaking to my elders and having them impart such knowledge, such wisdom and experience upon me, that a lot of the time I was just sitting there going, whoa. And it occurred to me that I now have comparable levels of knowledge to most of my friends and elders now. And so that makes me into sort of like a teacher, you know, like you've got to actually, in order to teach somebody something though, they have to see you as a teacher, right? They have to see you as learned. They have to see you as somebody who actually has knowledge that they want. Basically, you have to kind of prove to them in a very short order of things that you know more than they do. Not in an arrogant, oh, I'm smarter than you kind of way, but I have some knowledge and I want to impart it to you, and I'm not going to charge you for it. I'm not going to belittle you or anything. I'm just going to share a little something with you, and you can take it or leave it. You know, you can make up your own damn mind. And it seems to me that when all of us are sharing knowledge, it's actually kind of really difficult. when you're dealing with people who aren't on the same wavelength, and this makes us not want to converse with new people a lot of the time, and our circle of friends gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and eventually we wind up with only a few old friends who we know very, very well, who don't really teach us anything anymore, and we begin to stagnate. We don't get we don't get radically more intelligent on a day-to-day basis, because we're talking about the same topics with with people that we're familiar with. And this is why it's so important to, find people who are smarter than you, who know something that you don't know, because if you don't think that you've got something to learn, then you've got something to learn. And it seems to me that if you're willing to listen and let people impart knowledge to you without getting arrogant about it and say, you think you're smarter than me, you think you're better than me, and not kind of like get all a hump on your back with some kind of superiority complex, you know, then you can actually advance yourself down a path of wisdom. If, on the other hand, you're adversarial about it, if you've still got too much ego about it, and you aren't willing to admit that you're an idiot who doesn't know what he's talking about 90% of the time, as we all are, I think 90% of the time, we don't know what we're talking about, we can't back it up with facts, and we're ignorant. Right. And I'm the first to admit that I'm pretty ignorant. I haven't accumulated this knowledge via experience, actually doing things in the real world. I've only absorbed it vicariously by living through the lives and the experiences and the feelings and the knowledge of others. Right.
Well, and so this means that you walk the walk too, Vinny. You do walk.
Well, I do, but I only walk my own walk. So that's the 10% that I do know about, is the things that I've actually done and verified in my own life. The rest of it seems to be largely theoretical, because you can't live 100 lifetimes and accumulate the exact same experiences as, say, 100 learned elders that are in your life. You actually are forced by proxy to live vicariously through their experiences and try to build upon their lessons by applying them in the real world. Unfortunately, it means that the vast majority of the knowledge that you have is actually theoretical knowledge. It's not something that you can actually do. Like, let's say somebody tells you there's aluminum, barium, and strontium in the rainwater.
Cesium. Yes.
Whatever, and you don't have a lab, and you don't have the technical expertise to actually test that water sample yourself, and you actually have to give it to somebody else. See, that's what I mean about knowing something and then being able to actually apply that knowledge directly, and that's what I mean by ignorance. If you don't have experience in something, then you're living vicariously through the knowledge of others, and you're actually, in reality, ignorant. You're aware of it, but you haven't actually got experience with it. And there's a very important distinction there, because if you don't understand that distinction, then you're going to start to become really arrogant, and you're going to think you know everything when you actually don't know jack.
That is such an important statement, because, you know, we were, I think, talking on a non-on-air phone call, and we were discussing the fact that certain individuals – in the truther movement, or even certain movements in the truther movement, you know, tend to sell out or whatever, because, you know, they do become very full of themselves. And it is true. And I'm not, of course, nobody here on Revolution Radio does that. But anyway, but what I want to say is that it is true what you're saying. The vicariously learned truther has the responsibility of realizing that, hey, I'm reading this. Like the article I was reading, I was reading it. So, you know, I can surround myself with all the articles I want, you know, and that type of thing. And I respect the people that don't listen to mainstream media news. And for that matter, there's a real fine line between truther news and mainstream media news at this point in the game. So, yeah. Now, for instance, Jane Goodall, you know, speaking on primates, okay, she is not an individual who lives vicariously through knowledge of others. That woman, for instance, knows because of her experience. Most of us are on different percentage levels, obviously, regurgitating truths that we feel we believe in, and then we, you know, go ahead and communicate that. So you're completely correct, Vinny. And, you know, it's funny. You know, I have to say this. Some people find you to be very avant-garde and very. There's no word here for you. You know, you're Vinny. You know, you're. It's a.
Actually, there is a word, and Zen Gardner used it to describe me. It's inimitable, and it means can't be imitated.
Okay, so say it again, please.
Inimitable.
Inimitable.
Yeah.
Okay, and that means.
Means can't be imitated.
Can't be imitated. Wow. That, okay. Care to elaborate?
Yeah. Well, if you can't imitate something, it means that it's totally original and it's in its own unique way. So much so, in fact, that nobody can even attempt to sound like you or be like you because you're so unique. Can't be imitated.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, they can try, and that, you know, mockery or imitation is a great form of flattery, whatever that is.
I mean, I'd like to see one day, actually, somebody like come on radio or TV or something like that and actually do a Vinnie Eastwood impression.
Oh,
because every time somebody's tried, it just sounds really, really hokey to me. And it's like, that's not as stylish as me.
But, you know, God bless them for trying. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you know. You know what? I haven't discussed that with you, your theories on God, but I don't know if that's an on-air phone conversation.
Well,
so,
I've discussed it on air many times.
Okay.
My theory of God is that God is a macro-organism and that we have levels of life that live within it. So inside my body are 5 trillion cells. To those cells, I'm God. Inside each and one of those cells is 5 trillion other microscopic, even smaller down the scale, organisms. And inside each one of those, there's another million organisms for which each organism up the scale is a god to them, right? So
correct.
My god is probably, I'd say, the Earth, which is several trillion organisms, biological and otherwise, ranging from the microscopic bacterium that live on our material plane to deer and eagles and fish and whales and what have you. So you've got all these organisms on this one creature. Okay, it's a macroorganism, a much larger living entity that is comprised of all the living entities that are actually living within it. Yeah, and the way it interprets its will is from a sort of vicarious interpretation of the psionic energy that comes off of all of the creatures on Earth. So, if everybody's like meditating one day or whatever, you'll notice changes in the atmosphere, or there might be less earthquakes, or something of that nature. All the latent psionic energy that's coming off of all of us at any one time actually is starting to accumulate in a sort of wireless field, sort of like the cloud. And sometimes you can pick up signals from that cloud, and that's why your DNA is what they call a fractal antenna. It's tightly bound in a circle, kind of like a corkscrew, just like a normal antenna.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually an antenna structure, and this is what they actually call it in the technical term in science, is a fractal antenna. So you're capable of picking up signals, you're capable of sending them up into the organism in general, and you're capable of downloading them as well. And it just depends on how finely attuned you are to it. And this is what we call the will of God, or quote-unquote, the source. Now, the Earth itself is only one cell in a god above it. So let's say there's the Milky Way galaxy. That's probably the next organism up. So there's 100 billion stars within that, and several hundred billion planets. So all of those accumulate the psionic energy of all of the living organisms within all of those planets, all of those star systems and things of that nature. And that organism has a will of its own, but that's only one cell in the greater scheme of things, because we've seen through the Hubble telescope that there are like tens of bazillions of galaxies. Like, imagine that you're a microscopic organism, and then you're dealing with a relatively enormous creature that you can't even perceive, like the size of a human being. All right, but you've only got the awareness of a microbe. Okay, that's basically what we are when it comes to the universe. We're a microbe, and our awareness is nowhere near what it would need to be in order to actually understand the outlay of it, because we've only got a subjective experience. This is my experience. I currently am experiencing this world as Vinny Eastwood, and I get to interact with all of these other organisms on my scale, right? So I can pick up a little baby ducky or something like that and carry it back to its mother, as I did when I was in Queenstown. He was lost, and I feel really good about that kind of thing.
Right, and I hear you. I saved two tarantulas in my life in two different situations. I saved two tarantulas walking on the street.
Yeah.
I did.
Now, yeah, there's one part of humanity that says that we're a parasite or a virus, you know, and that we, kind of like in The Matrix, you know, they move to an area and they multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed, and then they move on. And I think to myself, well, we're departed from the natural world to a large degree. Now, that makes us one of two things, and I think we get a choice as to which one we get to embody, and we can change the tune anytime we want. We're either a parasite or we're a guardian. All right? That's what happens. That's the difference. If you don't fit in with the natural world, you're either there to destroy it or you're there to protect it, mm-hmm, from outside influences. And it seems to me that my interpretation of kind of like the will of God per se is it reinforced by synchronicity in my life. Okay, so if you intuit things and then they happen and you start to learn to pay attention to your intuition, it'll take you from like point A to point B, point C, and you won't even be able to predict what's going to happen next, where you're going, until it actually just happens right there and then. And so you kind of need to be, or at least this is my opinion, you sort of need to be fluid in your life, because as soon as you start having some kind of a plan about where you're going to turn up and what's going to happen and all of that kind of thing, if it's a very specific plan, sort of like, hey, there's a great looking gift shop there on the side of the highway or something, can we stop and go check it out? No, we're sticking to the plan. And what happens is, if you plan everything far too much, you, mm-hmm, miss out on all the opportunities that that everything is actually having on offer to you. And
true.
I think this is why people wind up living their lives miserable, doing the same job, not communicating with their children, absorbing entertainment through television and other various forms of screen, which destroy your brain on a daily basis, and they don't actually feel happy. It's because they're ignoring the signals from the source.
Yes, listen, we're on a break. Vinny, I'm going to, you know, beg you to stay. And then I'm going to be bringing in another guest as well, Bruce McDonald. I think you guys have interacted. Revolution Radio, everyone, freedomslips.com. I will be finding out if Vinny can join us next hour, or at least part of it. All right, we'll be back. Liberation Nation.